Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law. With your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, plaintiff Lisa Spearman, an employee of Royal Caribbean, was awarded $20,300,000 on June 1st, 2018. This award was for a severely crushed hand. This was a maritime accident and happened on the ship and governed under maritime law, the Jones Act. Today, from the law firm of Mester Law, is board-certified attorney Tanya Mester. Did I pronounce your name last?
Meister.
I knew it. I keep saying Mister. Meister. Tanya Meister, who was the co-lead attorney on this case. Tanya will be educating us on passengers and seamen's rights under the law. But first, I'd like to welcome today's legal panel. First, Gary Singer. Good afternoon.
Phil, how you doing today, man?
You know everybody. I didn't know that you knew her.
I do.
Wow. She actually said hello to you. She greeted you nicely.
Who doesn't know her?
And also, one of our new stand-ins, if you will, part of the show forever, is Eric Yankwit.
Good to see you both, and I wish I knew you before.
Pleasure to meet you.
Yep.
I do now.
And also, we have a very special attorney filling in as part of the legal panel is Chuck Vaccaro.
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
Hello.
Very good. Thank you, Chuck, for coming in and being part of the program as well. You know, I like to welcome, since I'm in a welcoming mood, our listeners on 96.9 FM, 103.9 FM, along with 740 AM. Our national listeners on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now apps. Good afternoon. And on most Thursdays at 5:30 p.m., you can actually watch Legal News and Review production live, and then you can see past programs. Just Google Facebook Legal News and Review, and we come right up. Again, that's just Facebook Legal News and Review. We come right up. And today, we're producing at the Kelly Ustahl Building in their very own mock courtroom. If you've been severely injured from a negligence of someone else, you should know your rights. Just go to justiceforall.com. First of all, from the law firm of Meister. Meister Law.
Often.
I know. I was thinking my college days because we used to call people, you know, John Meister, and everyone's a Meister.
That was my father's name.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe he was one of the originals. Tanya, you're board certified in maritime law and a specialist as well. And that makes you very unique because there's only a handful of board certified attorneys like Gary or even Chuck as well in different disciplines. But when I first read $20,300,000, I thought that's excessive for a crushed hand. But you spent time with me and you explained the verdict and why it was so large as well. Explain to our audience what happened to Ms. Spearman.
Well, Ms. Spearman was injured trying to rescue another crew member that she believed was going to be crushed in a watertight door that was closing. She reached out to open the door and her hand was crushed in the small opening of the door.
Right.
Her hand was actually caught in the door. It wouldn't come out. She suffered terrible injuries. She had a severe crush injury. She had fractures in her finger, and unfortunately, after years and years of treatment and rehabilitation, mm-hmm. she's lost the full use of her dominant right hand. She basically cannot make a fist, and she's left with a claw-like hand. And if you try to do anything, feed yourself, dress yourself, activities of daily living, your dominant hand is very important. But that was a minor part of her injury. She developed a terrible condition called CRPS. It's a complex regional pain syndrome. And what that is it started in the injured part of her hand and then spread to her arm and to other parts of her body, including her head.
It's a neurological disease.
It is. And it basically is extreme sensitization. So sensitivity to touch, the wind blowing and touching her skin, to her feels like a sledgehammer.
Wow.
Her small child trying to give her a hug, it's painful.
I've heard of that.
Sound, light, extreme sensitivity to everything. Obviously, the touch is the most significant. So this is spread throughout her body. And not only is she dealing with the dysfunction of probably the most important body part, your dominant right hand, she's got this extreme painful condition that is debilitating. She also suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, and I don't know if you're familiar with that, but when triggered, you flash back and you're trapped in that door as
and
she
that
was.
And that is so real. My wife passed from ovarian cancer and those machines, those bing-bings, and I was in an elevator that had a similar sound, and I flashed back. It is so surreal. It is a real condition.
And you were able to prove all this back to the incident.
Yes, it was all causally related to the crush injury, and it just devastating, horrible injuries. Honestly, the amount, in my opinion, was a very fair award based on the circumstances, supported by the evidence, and well-deserved.
How did she get injured? I read the synopsis of it, and it sounded like she was pulling someone who she thought would get crushed, and then sensors activated and slammed the door back on her?
The ship has these safety doors, and one's a watertight door, and they're also fire doors, and it's to basically save the ship in case of a fire or a sinking situation. So what happened is they have to do these routine tests. And so they were doing a test, and there was an announcement, everyone stand clear, don't pass through the doors. This nurse, in violation of the rules, opened the door, and when it's under control of the bridge, it automatically closes. And so as the nurse was passing through this door in violation of the rules, she tripped.
Oh, man.
And as she tripped, the door started to close on her. And the crew members are trained on watertight doors that these doors will close no matter what.
Oh, they
actually show a video of a giant meat bone in the door being chopped in half. So it's a very serious door. So Miss Spearman's remembering this video showing a giant bone being chopped in half, and this nurse is tripping and falling through the doors closing on her. That's why she reached out, grabbed the handle, and
instinctually.
Yeah. And as the door retreated into the pocket of the door, it took her hand with it. There was no cutout.
Now, she was an officer of the ship. Is that correct?
She was an officer
on
the ship.
And this happened in what year? When did this happen?
This happened in 2008. I litigated this case for 10 years.
Wow.
I had to travel to New Zealand to take depositions.
So
there was nothing stopping the door. I mean, while it had a sensor to stop it from closing on someone, there was nothing stopping the door from fully retracting if it met resistance.
Yes. So
that's bad design.
It's a terrible design. And we actually had testimony that there were alternative design theories that would have prevented this. And an important thing for you all to know, Miss Spearman was unlucky number 13 that was injured in this way. There were 12 crew members before her that were injured in a substantially similar manner. So the cruise line knew this door was problematic. The evidence showed that they provided absolutely no training on this type of door. They trained on the watertight door, they trained on the fire door, but they provided no training on this door, which was the hybrid, the semi-watertight fire door. So there was no training on how this door was to operate. It happened many times before.
Why do you? I don't mean to interrupt, but why do you think not? You know, you see a company like Royal Caribbean, which is a huge company making money by the barrels.
And I go on the cruises.
They're beautiful cruises, so it's understandable why people throw money at them to go on them. Why are they leaving dangerous doors?
Well, at trial, they presented testimony that they have X number of crew members, and that 12 crew members being injured wasn't significant enough for them to make any changes. So they basically,
did a cost analysis, and that was
They did a cost analysis.
So it was a cost analysis. Mm-hmm.
So now they will, because it's been $20 million, and it's costly.
mostly because the next one will be worse, because now there's a precedent.
Yeah, and when the verdict was announced, my client was crying, and her tears were, does this mean they are going to fix the door now that no one else is going to get hurt? And that's really what the case was about, stopping this from happening to the next crew member.
Has anyone been hurt since the case?
Royal Caribbean has not provided me that information. But I actually, in discovery, I know that I know there were a few incidents. It was produced through the end of the year 2008, and I saw that there was another incident, but none of that was admissible at trial because it was, the 3 years prior. So the 12 prior incidents were just in the 3 years before. There could have been more before that, but I was only given it, and we were only able to use the 3 years.
Have any of those people reached out to you?
No. So in litigation, there's a statute of limitations. You have 3 years in which to bring legal action. So someone who was injured prior to Ms. Spearman, they would be time barred at this point in pursuing a case.
Let me ask you a question, specifically going back to the legality of the law itself. Mm-hmm. Can you explain, because if this situation happened on land, the action by the employee would be barred by the workers' compensation. They would have to go through a whole different series of things, but you sued under what's called the Jones Act. How does that work?
Yeah, so very good question. If you're going to be injured at work, be injured at sea is the net. But maritime workers, if you work at sea, you're considered a seaman, if you're a male or a female. And essentially, you have benefits similar to the state work comp in that you get medical care for the injury and you get food and lodging or money for your food and lodging while you're recovering until you reach the point of maximum medical improvement. That part's similar to state work comp. But in addition, you can sue for negligence or unseaworthiness. So the Jones Act is a federal cause of action that allows a seafarer to sue for the negligence of their employer or their co-employee. In this case, we allege that the nurse was a negligent co-employee because she opened the door in violation of the rules. There's also the doctrine of unseaworthiness, which is a general maritime law cause of action. And we also brought that in Ms. Spearman's case. The jury found that Royal Caribbean was both negligent under the Jones Act and that the vessel was unseaworthy.
Okay, but maritime law is a federal law, correct?
Correct.
Now, how were you able to bring this in a state court as opposed to the federal court?
So another good question.
Yeah,
there's a difference.
Well, that's why he's sitting there.
There's another federal statute called Savings to Suitors Clause, and that allows the claimant to choose state or federal court. You have original jurisdiction in federal court because it's a maritime action, but the Savings to Suitors Clause allows the claimant to pick state or federal. And in my opinion, these cases are better in state court than in federal. And it depends on the case. Some cases I might prefer in federal. The sad reality is that the cruise lines now have employment agreements that contain arbitration clauses. So the reality is someone injured today is now forced to go to arbitration, which in my opinion is a very unfair forum as compared to state or federal court.
Well, the Jones Act requires a jury, or you can't ask for a jury, correct?
Well, the Jones Act, the plain language of the Jones Act says you have a right to a trial by jury, so that's why I think it's very odd that these cases are being sent to arbitration. And it's
Has that been tested?
Not by the United States Supreme Court. It's been upheld by all the lower courts, the district level courts, and all of the circuit courts. So right now, I have no choice but to arbitrate these cases. And the cruise lines make it as onerous as possible.
Sure.
They say
who pays
you have
for the arbitrator?
The cruise line pays for the arbitrator.
It's a binding or is it non-binding arbitration?
It's a binding arbitration.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and these clauses, you won't believe these clauses. These are crew members that are working for a U.S.-based company on ships that come to the United States. And so they have arbitration clauses that require that they go to Manila, Philippines, or they go to London, England, or Monaco, or Panama, under Panamanian law.
Is
it's
that
outrageous.
Why, is that why you're
yes
traveling
no
to the Philippines?
Yes, I actually am scheduled for an arbitration for a Carnival crew member in Manila, Philippines on January 22nd.
I'm not sure how
under United States law.
You know, the United States law part's interesting, but I'm not sure how outrageous it is, just in the regard that it's a very, I mean, the cruise lines are very international, as are the people who work in them. So, you know, in a way, I'm not even sure why is it United States law.
Well, it is United States law because there's a choice of law analysis that the Supreme Court has come up with to determine the appropriate law. So when you're dealing with a company that is based in the United States, these major cruise lines, their base of operations are in the United States, their principal place of business. They get the protection of our land, the property laws. Their ships come in to and from United States ports. They get the protection of our Coast Guard. So they get all the benefits from the U.S., and so they should have the burden of U.S. law. Otherwise, they're out-competing all of the true U.S. companies.
Yeah, fair
think about think about Disneyland.
But they run in, but you know, these cruise ships run in other countries. Are they not under U.S. law? Like, if you take a Royal Caribbean cruise in Italy, would it be under United States law or Italian law?
Well,
that's a good question, actually.
It would be under U.S. law.
I mean,
because,
our Coast Guard's better than theirs, but
so
it's a former post, and I can say that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm the Coast Guard.
No, but Royal Caribbean is based in the United States, and pursuant to the cases are Lauritzen and Roditis in the U.S. Supreme Court, and under that analysis, a company based in the U.S., the principal place of business, corporate headquarters being in the U.S., they're subject to U.S. law.
Okay.
And it actually has, I mean, if you're interested in
like
the minutiae of that. I'm sorry?
What, I didn't mean to interrupt, and I am interested, so we'll definitely get to that in a second. But what about a company like MSL? I think it's called
MSC.
MSC just came over to Miami, but they're not a United States company.
They're an Italian company, and their principal place of operation is in Italy, so it's a different analysis.
So you're going to Rome for that one.
I don't have any cases against them.
Not yet.
But,
not yet, anyway.
But the minutiae of that is it's very important that we have a robust, for the national defense of our country, it's very important that we have a robust merchant marine.
Oh, yeah.
And if we allow these companies that are based in the U.S. take advantage of all of the benefits of being in the U.S. to escape U.S. law, then it basically does away with all the U.S. mariners' jobs. And we need to have a lot of U.S. mariners, because if we are forced to war, where we need to go to war for one reason, all these people we need trained and ready to be shipped off.
So unsung heroes of.
But isn't that sort of outdated in a sense, because we have a robust navy?
And
now
and
the merchant marine is super important.
So let me explain why.
Yeah.
So you have a robust navy, but how does the navy get all the supplies they need? The merchant marine. How do they get? I mean, think about what happened in World War II in the Pacific. How did we win? It was the merchant marines that took everything over there to build the landing gears.
So those are private companies that are working for in the government.
They can be working for the government at that point, but we need to have people ready, willing, and able to go. And so it's all tied together. If you let these companies that are using our land to make money escape our laws, it impacts the employment of U.S. workers. So it's a very complex thing, but it does go back to the national defense
well
of our
explained.
Country.
Let me ask you, follow up on something you said earlier, because you talked about the statute of limitations, and then you talked about these agreements for binding arbitration that they're using to get around the Jones Act. Now, on a cruise ship, for example, companies put in a limited statute of limitation in your cruise ship contract, a pair of passage, so you only have 1 year if you get injured on a cruise ship to bring a lawsuit. Are you seeing that happening or people trying to do that in the Jones Act cases?
Not in the crew cases. I think I have not seen that. What they do is in the employment arbitration agreements, they have the 3-year statute of limitation. And so the passengers, it's actually another federal statute that allows their statute of limitation to be 1 year. And let me just say that if we have any listeners that are passengers, you should know that you have to give notice of your claim in writing 6 months after the date of incident.
6 months, not a year?
Well, you have to do, and within 6 months, you have to give written notice of your claim of damages. And if you don't do that, you could potentially be barred from proceeding.
That's on the fine print of your ticket.
Print of your ticket. Yeah. So yeah.
It's my ticket.
Yeah. My understanding for our listeners is that if you're hurt on a cruise ship, you call the appropriate type of attorney, such as our guest tonight, immediately without delay if you even think you're hurt, because the guidelines and restrictions that are put on you by that cruise ticket are incredibly difficult.
Yeah, and so there was a decision recently that a maritime defendant escaped liability because there was not a 6-month notice letter. And they gave 6 months notice to the cruise line, but it was like a shore excursion company or some third party. I forget what it was. It wasn't my case, but they actually escaped liability because they didn't get that 6-month written notice. So 6 months for the notice, 1 year for filing, and most of the cases for the major cruise lines are required to be filed in federal court in Miami. There are a few on the West Coast, so you always want to check your passenger ticket contract.
Now, I'm curious on your thoughts on this, because you're knee-deep in this, obviously, and you said that.
And board certified.
And board certified.
That makes you an expert.
Thanks for ruining my train of thought.
I couldn't resist.
The arbitration, after all the times I've done it to you, I deserve it.
That's right.
The arbitration, you said, you know, maybe going to the Supreme Court, and that most of the districts have ruled in favor of enforcement. I know that's the trend. But how is it anticipated, especially with the recent changes in the Supreme Court, that that's going to go down?
Well, I can only hope, and I will tell you that I believe it's the right thing under our law, And the reason, there's two reasons. Number one is statutory intent of Congress. And if you look at the plain language of the Federal Arbitration Act, Chapter 1 excludes Siemens employment contracts from arbitration.
That would be pretty big. Then why would the districts be ruling against
it? Well, because the second Chapter 2 of the Federal Arbitration Act allows these foreign arbitrations.
Oh.
And so the circuit courts have interpreted Chapter 1 to not apply to Chapter 2 of the Federal Arbitration Act. But I believe that under the plain construction rules, that Chapter 1 provides the definitions that should apply to Chapter 2. So I think even the most conservative Supreme Court justice, just doing a plain reading language under statutory construction, will see that Siemens contracts should be excluded.
I would think that conservatives tend to lean more towards statutory construction.
Exactly. And then we have a second intent of Congress, and that's the Jones Act. The Jones Act says that the seaman has the right to a trial by jury, and that's being deprived in arbitration. There are even more bases. There's a few cases. Mitsubishi started with the Mitsubishi case in arbitration that said an arbitration clause can't deprive someone of their legal rights. So in tandem of requiring a foreign arbitration under foreign law, that can't deprive them of their U.S. statutory rights. And so I contend that these foreign arbitrations, sometimes you get U.S. law and sometimes you're under foreign law, but if you are in a foreign arbitration under foreign law, you're losing your U.S. statutory rights. And that's another reason to invalidate the arbitration clause.
Now, we're a hub for cruise lines. Millions of people come here every year. With that said and done, we also have a tremendous amount of workforce, not only that services those large ships, but even those yachts, you know, that are 100 feet long as well. We have, from our estimate, from our research, there's over 90,000 people that have jobs due to the vessels of 100 feet or more. And they're all covered under this, correct?
Correct.
So
it's 100 feet or more.
Yeah, well...
Is the law? Is that the law?
No. The Jones Act applies to a seaman working on a vessel.
So, oh, that's it?
Yeah. Could be smaller than that.
And so a vessel, it could be what's the definition of a vessel?
A vessel, it's interesting, there's been some, so basically anything that is a navigation and navigable waters. So for example, maritime law is not going to apply to an incident on an inland lake in Florida that doesn't connect to the coast, is not used traditionally for commerce. Indians didn't use it to trade snakes and skins or whatnot. So it needs to be on navigable waters. The Great Lakes would apply for navigable waters
anywhere
as well.
The coast
but,
jurisdiction.
But vessels are things in navigation or capable of navigation. So some things can be towed and still be considered a vessel, things that are not a vessel, some platforms. There was an interesting case, the U.S. Supreme Court, about a houseboat.
Right.
That they had basically, this man had dismantled. It was in Jupiter or Riviera mm-hmm. Beach.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah,
I
think it was Jupiter. Yeah. That was not a vessel. He basically took all of the marine aspects of this houseboat and used like land-based house things, and it was not capable of navigation, and so it basically was taken out of the vessel status.
That was a while ago. Yeah, that was interesting. I remember that case.
I have some clients that work on mega yachts. They're captains and crew members, and a lot of them incorporate themselves because they're paid as independent contractors. So they decide to incorporate themselves to help limit their tax liability. Are they still subject to the Jones Act?
So, yes, they would if they're seamen. And I see in my practice a lot of times people call themselves something, but in you have to look at the reality of their job, the reality of the circumstance. Are they true independent contractors? Independent contractors? Or are they just calling themselves that for tax purposes? So a lot of times in law, we kind of pull apart all of the corporate fictions and look at the reality of the situation. So they very well may be, and oftentimes I've represented many crew members who suffered injuries on yachts that their contracts call them independent contractors, but the reality is they were not. And regardless, they were entitled to protection under the Jones Act if something were to happen to them.
Very good.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, you're the tax guy. It sounds like they would fail all the tests, right?
Well, it does on some level, sure, but they're not in charge of it. The employer is the one who's determining whether or not they're an employer or an independent contractor.
We're only really 2 minutes away from closing the show, so I have to ask these questions. First of all, when it comes to finding an attorney, can I go to any attorney? to handle a maritime
traffic
case?
Well, I wouldn't recommend it.
Right.
I will tell you, I get phone calls from people who went to a non-maritime attorney and they've blown the statute of limitation,
oh,
or they've filed the case in the wrong court, or they've mispleaded it. So if you are injured in a maritime incident, you do need a maritime law specialist.
And real quick, you are a specialist. You're board certified. Briefly, what does that mean?
It's a rigorous process. You have to practice in the area, have significant involvement in the area. You have to go through an application process. You're peer reviewed. You have to show a level of competence. You have to have good ethics and character, knowledge of the law, and then you have to take a really hard test.
Yeah, harder than
and
the
pass
bar.
The
hard.
And
we're just about out of time, Tanya. If someone does have one of these issues, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, they could call me or email me. My name is Tanya Meister, T-O-N-Y-A, Meister, M-E-I-S-T-E-R. My website is meisterlawfirm.com, M-E-I-S-T-E-R-L-A-W, firm, FIRM.com. My office number is 305-590-5570.
Wow.
And clearly you're a brilliant attorney. I think anyone who has these sort of problems should call you. I want to thank you very much for being here, but we're out of time. So to our listeners, enjoy those fair winds and following seas, but remember, be safe and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review,
great.
Recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310 or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.